So we are constantly, I mean, we're just bombarded with this idea of
It's
collaboration.
everywhere.
It is. It's the metric everyone chases, the buzzword on every executive slide deck. But here's the paradox that always gets me. If building these high-performing teams requires collaboration, why do so many of us default to discussing team issues? Well, everywhere, except with the person who's actually involved.
It's the massive energy leak in modern organizations,
Yeah.
a huge one. We've got the tech, we've got the talent, the strategy, but we struggle with the most fundamental human behavior,
Which is.
just the courageous act of talking to people instead of talking about them.
And that simple distinction, right? That little shift in our communication wiring, that's the core of our deep dive today. We're digging into the analysis from that CEO World magazine article, Building Effective Collaboration by Design. And we're going to dissect how these communication patterns, they just fundamentally shape everything from psychological safety all the way to high performance.
And the context here is so critical. I mean, collaboration isn't a soft skill anymore. It's a vital requirement for any company trying to navigate, complexity and constant
The
change.
survival skill, really.
It is. But the research is so clear on this. You can't just mandate collaboration with new software or some new org chart. It's built one conversation at a time. So our mission today is to really analyze what specific courage, clarity, and discipline are needed to make that direct, honest dialogue the default, not the exception.
Okay, let's start there then. Let's define the massive pitfall that slows down, I mean, almost every team we see, the temptation of triangulation.
Triangulation. It sounds complicated, but it's destructively simple. It's just discussing a concern, a frustration, an issue you have with someone, but with a third party.
Someone who wasn't involved.
Exactly. The main character isn't even in the room. And the story, of course, often gets embellished or, distorted along the
Yes, sir.
way.
And we've all been there. We've all done it. You're either the storyteller who's just venting, or you're the listener providing that safe ear. It feels like you're releasing pressure, just letting off steam. But that's the illusion. This behavior doesn't just slow progress down, it actively fractures teams. And crucially, it makes sure that any useful feedback that was needed, it arrives way too late.
Or to rise weaponized.
Or weaponized, yeah. So if we look at the psychology, why do we do it? Why do we instinctively choose this indirect destructive path, even when we know deep down it's damaging trust?
Well, the research points to five primary temptations that pull us toward it.
And this list is essential, I think, because it really exposes the internal story we tell ourselves to justify avoiding the real conversation. So what are the core
The
drivers?
first is the most obvious one. It's just the immediate desire to avoid discomfort.
Of course.
Direct conversations can feel like conflict, and our brains are just wired to avoid anything that feels like a threat. The second is that a lot of people seek validation before they'll even consider a confrontation.
They want backup.
They want someone else, that third party, to say, "Yeah, you're right to be angry." They want to feel justified before they face the source of the issue.
Which, when you think about it, is really just shifting risk, isn't it? You're exchanging the risk of one tough chat for the risk of, I don't know, being seen as a gossip. Or worse, you're just confirming you don't have confidence in your own position.
Exactly. The third driver is just plain uncertainty about the other person's response. We play out the worst-case scenario in our heads, which fuels anxiety, and suddenly the indirect route seems so much safer.
And the fourth.
The fourth is the impulse to process our feelings first. We genuinely believe we need to talk it out with someone else to, clarify our thoughts before we engage the actual person.
Okay, I want to pause on that one because isn't processing necessary sometimes? I mean, if I'm furious about something, shouldn't I talk to a trusted coach or a colleague just to calm down, structure my thoughts, instead of storming over and saying something I'll regret?
That's a powerful distinction, and the nuance here is absolutely key. If you are processing to gain clarity on your own behavior
Okay.
or to find the best way to speak to that person, that can be super helpful. But if you are processing to gain sympathy or to recruit an ally against the person you're frustrated with,
Then you've crossed the line.
you've crossed the line into triangulation. The rule is this: the conversation has to focus on you and your preparation, not on the other person's flaws.
That reframes it entirely.
Okay.
Okay. And the fifth temptation.
It's the underlying assumption that the indirect conversation will just be easier. It rarely is in the long run, but that perception of ease is a powerful lure. But here's where the accountability really lands on you, the listener. The research is emphatic that you are every bit as culpable as the storyteller for giving these words oxygen. If you engage with the gossip, you're endorsing fractured communication.
Exactly. To stop triangulation from becoming a cultural norm, you have to break the circuit on both ends. You can't have a high-trust culture if you're okay with words being told in the absence of the person they're about.
You just can't.
So if triangulation is this massive hidden energy cost, what's the counter strategy? What does the solution look like?
Well, this brings us to section two, talking to people. This is the leadership superpower. The solution is, you know, direct, respectful, open dialogue. And when teams really commit to this consistently and respectfully, they unlock what the research calls the collaborative trifecta.
The trifecta, the essential components for sustainable high performance. So that's component number one.
Clarity. It's all about clarity. Misalignment is the silent killer in organizations.
Mm.
Direct conversations accelerate clarity, not just about tasks and what needs to get done, but about expectations, intentions, goals, working styles, all of it. When we avoid these tough talks, we just let misinterpretation fester.
And this leads to that powerful phrase from the research that I love, in clarity lies kindness. That phrase, clarity is kindness, it's profound. It means you're actively being unkind if you allow misalignment to persist just to avoid a potentially uncomfortable...
A five-minute chat.
You're trading short-term comfort for long-term operational damage.
You're sacrificing performance on the altar of temporary ease. Which brings us to the second part of the trifecta, trust.
Right.
Direct dialogue is a huge signal of respect. When I come to you directly, even for something challenging, I'm signaling I value you enough and I respect our relationship enough to share this with you openly. People trust those who speak honestly and listen openly far more than those who, you know, manage or avoid difficult realities.
And the third element is what actually makes the team run the plays efficiently.
That's accountability. Powerful peer-to-peer accountability, where two members hold each other responsible for outcomes. That only exists when people are willing to face each other. If all the tough discussions happen behind closed doors or through other people, accountability is always positional. It's always top-down. And ultimately, it's just ineffective.
So if a team really operates with this trifecta clarity, trust, and accountability, what's the tangible result? I mean, we talk a lot about psychological safety as a baseline, but the research suggests it goes beyond that.
Oh, it goes way beyond. Issues get resolved faster. Innovation accelerates because friction becomes constructive, not destructive.
Mm.
And leadership becomes a shared responsibility across the whole team.
Mm.
And yes, that distinction between safety and empowerment is key. Psychological safety is the belief that you won't be punished for speaking up. Empowerment, which comes from the trifecta, is the confidence that your direct input will actually lead to constructive action and better results. You move from just being safe to being truly effective.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting for me, because now we can look at the specific patterns that cause the most drag. Let's move to section three, collaboration breakdown patterns and the high performer contrast.
Right, so most collaboration issues, they aren't caused by a lack of talent or will. They're caused by predictable bad habits that are allowed to take root and just become embedded in a company's DNA.
Organizational drag.
That's what we call it.
Yeah.
And there are five common communication failures that just stop teams from ever getting to clarity and trust.
We already know about triangulation, so what are the other four communication criminals?
Okay, so first up is assumptions. This is when you fill in someone else's motivations without ever asking them. You see a behavior, you decide why they did it.
And usually you assume the worst, right?
Yeah.
Malice or incompetence?
Always. And then you act based on that narrative you just invented. It's the polar opposite of curiosity.
Oh, we've all done that. Well, clearly they just didn't care about the deadline. Instead of, hey, can you help me understand what drove your priority shift this week?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Next up is avoidance. Classic strategy. Just hoping the conflict will magically resolve itself or waiting for the problem to get so big that someone else is forced to step in.
Mm-hmm.
This just guarantees the issue festers and grows and the eventual cleanup cost just skyrockets.
What about the one that seems almost benevolent? The one the research calls hero behavior.
This one is one of the most subtle destroyers of high performance. Hero behavior is when a manager or a teammate tries to protect someone from tough feedback that could actually help them grow.
Like saying, don't tell Jane her presentation confused the client. She's already so stressed.
Perfect example. They shield the person from the pain of the truth, but they also rob them of the chance to grow. It actually signals a deep lack of belief in that person's resilience.
Wow. That makes feedback toxic because it means the manager is hoarding the truth instead of letting the team handle it. And the last one is everywhere now, thanks to the digital age, digital action.
Digital action. It's sending what should be a real two-way conversation, especially anything complex, emotional, or politically charged over email or text or Slack. The inability to capture tone, the instantaneity of it, the lack of real-time clarification, it just guarantees a massive secondary conflict.
That compression of emotional complexity into a paragraph of text causes so much damage. Okay, so let's flip that lens. The research points to decades of studying high-performing teams, right? In these high-stakes CEO forums, what's the one thing they all do differently?
They address issues directly and collaboratively. I mean, they've simply normalized the very behavior we're discussing. They don't tolerate sideways venting, and they are aggressive about preventing unresolved tension from taking root in the culture.
Because that tension doesn't just go away.
It never dissipates. It just transfers. It shows up as passive-aggressive behavior or, you know, burnout.
It sounds like it's a fundamental cultural code for them. What are the key shared understandings in those environments?
Well, first, talking about someone behind their back is just unacceptable, strictly. Second, talking to someone directly is not a critique. It's seen as a profound sign of respect and investment in that relationship.
That's a huge shift.
It is. And most critically, they all share the understanding that the feedback you need most might be the feedback you want least, but it's delivered because of a commitment to mutual success. That frame changes feedback from a critique into just an essential part of working together.
So if you, the listener, you want to transition your team out of that drag zone and into this high performer state.
Yeah.
Where do you even start? This brings us to section four, creating a talk to not about culture, the five actionable commitments.
This is the tactical roadmap. Commitment number one has to be establish direct dialogue as a norm. Not an exception.
Right.
This is setting a clear, non-negotiable standard that any concern, any frustration must be addressed with the person involved first. The indirect route has to become socially unacceptable, full stop.
But just setting the norm doesn't make people capable of doing it, which brings us to commitment number two.
Precisely. You have to equip people with the skills to have these tough conversations. Avoidance often just comes from a lack of practice and ability. We assume adults know how to do this, but they often don't.
So training.
Training on emotional regulation. Constructive dialogue, genuine curiosity, it's all essential. The source material actually suggests a great starting point for anyone on this journey. Craig Weber's book, Conversational Capacity.
And if the skills are in place, the third commitment is about seeing it in action.
Model the behavior at the top. This is non-negotiable. If leaders demand direct dialogue, but then they triangulate among themselves or send tough conversations over email,
the culture will fail immediately.
Instantly. Leaders have to consistently demonstrate the courage and respect that's required, even in their own highest stakes conversations.
What about reinforcing it? How do you reward that difficult, courageous behavior and make sure it sticks?
That's commitment four. Reward clarity and transparency. You have to actively celebrate people who engage directly, especially when the conversation is hard or the outcome is challenging. You have to make that courageous act visible and tie it directly to your company's values. If you reward silence and avoidance, that's what you're going to get.
And finally, commitment five, which brings us right back to that foundation of safety.
Build psychological safety so direct feedback feels safe, not risky. This means fostering an environment where people truly trust each other's intent. If I know you're coming to me out of respect and a desire to improve our shared results, I'll receive that feedback openly.
But if I fear your motive is to expose me or undermine me,
then you'll naturally revert to defensiveness and avoidance, and the whole system just torpedoes itself.
That final synthesis feels like the core lesson here. Success belongs to leaders who approach tough conversations, not just with honesty, but with empathy and a true intention to build stronger relationships. This isn't just about efficiency.
No, it's about relational strength.
It's about being more human at work.
Absolutely. Moving from talking about people to talking to them isn't just a communication fix. It's the most powerful catalyst for building trust. It's the foundation where high-performing teamwork can actually thrive. Intentionally. The intentionality changes everything.
So as you reflect on your work week, ask yourself this. If talking to people is the ultimate signal of respect and investment in a relationship, how many of your daily interactions are currently allowed to signal a lack of respect through avoidance or triangulation? And what is the true hidden cost of that perceived ease on your team's innovation and its ultimate performance? Something to mull over until our next deep dive.